there a doctor in the house?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
All right, it's that time of the week again. Advanced medicine to kick it off in, I guess we'd say an advanced kind of style. I think about Dr. Batar, all the things we've done over the years, and Super Don has acknowledged this in radio. How do we classify what we do, right, on radio? Because it's not just, hey, old lady, little old ladies, nothing against little old ladies calling, hey, Dr. Batar, what do I do for my hangnail? I mean, we certainly answer questions like that, but I think it's about, just like advanced medicine, about principle. It's teaching principles that we live by or attempt to live by and hope others can do the same or better.
Absolutely, Robert. The principles are what hold us in good stead. We, you know, whenever I'm working with my son, for example, with his math class, since I homeschool him, I try not to teach him things that are repetitive or things that he has to memorize. I try to teach him the concepts. I try to teach him how to think, how to approach the problem. Because once you, it's almost like the principle of giving a person a fish versus teaching them to fish.
Mm-hmm.
But principles allow us to be able to, when put in a situation where we're not certain of which direction to go, the principle will allow us to find the right path, as opposed to if we just memorize, do this, don't do this. You know, principles are always more sound as far as from an educational perspective, and they're also more sustainable. You don't have to rely on your memory. And as far as I'm concerned, when you learn something, when you people go to school, and like microbiology, for example, right, or pathology, for example, the vast majority of that is all memorization. And in reality, yes, you need to know some fundamentals, but in reality, once you're in clinical practice, if you need to look something up, you're just going to go to a book, or you're going to call the pathologist, or you're going to do a search for it. You're not going to sit there and try to rack your memory for what that one thing that you were told to memorize.
Mm-hmm.
So memorization, as opposed to learning principles is always the better way of learning.
Well, and even principles in investigation. We had last week on a mom of a now 18-year-old, her son. They don't vaccinate after two of the children were injured early, and now he's 18. And he was on a Reddit bulletin board and started saying, hey, I'm 18 now. I want to get vaccinated. I can't believe I'm alive. My parents didn't want me to get vaccinated. And this became an international sensation news story because, you know, now, hey, we can divide families and their children by saying, kids, if you want to get vaccinated and mom and dad don't want, it's cool, come out and do it. So I had the mom on and she said, you know, I asked her about it. I said, you know, he was curious and he was investigating the vaccine issue. And I thought, you know what? This is an opportunity to relay to parents everywhere that the moment they show an interest in something, don't just pass it off as like, oh, honey, that's really cool, and just carry on. Get in there with them. Get down into the research, and as you talk about, the principles behind what they're learning, so that when they become 18, they're not only knowledgeable, but they understand why they know what they know, as opposed to now this 18-year-old going, oh, well, the authorities at AAP say vaccines are good, and my mom is wrong, you know, and this is what we're dealing with now.
Yeah, and this is probably more a behavioral issue. The kids, you know, trying to posture. I'll give you an example. With Avi, I think I mentioned this on a radio show probably a couple months ago. Last year, his freshman year in university, he was part of a group that was assigned to debate the pro-vaccine stance. And then there was a group that was assigned to debate the anti-vaccine stance. And it was interesting that he was on the pro-vaccine stance, and he said he was able to give a lot of insight from the other side because people didn't even know. Even the opposite side, they were trying to figure out if there was a way that Avi could get on the opposite side, you know, to debate that issue. But, of course, the purpose of debate is, if you really want to get good at debate, is mm-hmm. to take the opposing view and then stand up for that view and support the view that you don't agree with, because that really teaches you the skills of how to debate.
Exactly,
how to
look
at. So he actually did a great job, and he said that what he found the most fascinating was the lack of information that people had. And, you know, this brings up a really interesting point, too, with the attacks that a lot of people have had. So I find this process, and Robert, I don't want to go off track because I know you two wanted to probably talk about this mom, but I have found that the process of this linear, sequential, logical type of thought, the process that a person goes through, from an observational standpoint, it divulges a lot about that individual. And this comes back to that stupid versus ignorance component.
Yes. Right?
So I'm not anti-vaccine, I'm anti-stupid. Then Rahan's saying, I'm not anti-stupid, I'm just anti-vaccine. And I just find that to be one of the funniest things. But when you start to look at this, and people, some people took that as, mostly people that I know, friends of mine, and you know, people close to me, they were like, this is politically not correct, you shouldn't be talking like this. So, of course, I have to straighten them out. First of all, I've never been politically correct, so it's ridiculous to even think I'm going to be politically correct. But the second thing is, this is purely an observational scientific component, the way I said it. I'm not trying to denounce anybody. I'm not trying to belittle anybody. I'm just trying to establish a very simple, politically correct or incorrect, I don't care, but a very simple equation to define how intelligence works, okay? And this is I've actually got the mathematical formula. I've already done it. I've already derived it. I haven't decided how I'm going to release it. But the difference between ignorance and stupidity is that ignorance is curable. With knowledge, a person becomes aware, and they go through that evolutionary process that they now learn, they understand. Whereas stupidity, they simply, no matter how much information you throw at them, they cannot process that information to get to that place of knowledge. So they have either a lack of capacity to process that information, or they merely refuse to look at any other component. So the variable X, you can substitute ignorance or stupidity. Stupidity is where it's equal to zero. Ignorance is anything greater than the value of zero, which means that then times the education, there's a whole equation. I'll send it to you, but I'm going to release this. It's a beautiful formula. I've had a couple of my friends that are mathematicians look at it, and they said, that's genius. Rahan was going to put a little thing with Einstein's picture in the back, but when you look at it, you're going to laugh, but all aspects are addressed in this equation. And so I'm not trying to belittle anybody, but there's definitely a difference between stupidity and ignorance. And you will notice that the people that are making the stance, if they have the ability to process it cognitively, then the only reason that they would do this is because they have an agenda, because nobody could be that stupid. I mean, I can understand a person that doesn't have the raw cognitive ability to process that. I get that. But ignorance is not an excuse. Ignorance can be cured. People that understand this, and we've had many people that said, William Thompson and some of these other people that have come out there and said, you know, they were against it from the get-go, but they were in conflict with themselves. But the point being that once a person processes this information, there's only one logical conclusion that a reasonable individual with a reasonable intellect can reach.
Yeah, and that's the uncomfortable place for those that when they reach that and they got to decide, oh my gosh, now everything that I thought was true is not true, and I got to decide what I'm going to do with that information, right? Because you're going to be ostracized by your peers. You might even lose your license in certain circumstances. So do you go forward in cognitive dissonance aided by a pharmaceutical, psychiatric drug or otherwise? Or do you stand up in defense of scientific integrity and the defense of your patients, for instance? And, you know, this brings up the first story that Super Don sent out to us tonight. It's in the notes at robertscottbell.com, a doctor's dilemma to see or not to see unvaccinated kids. And I'm saying, what kind of dilemma is that? I mean, is this one of the things you get out of med school and they go, listen, we just want you to know that if you're going into pediatrics and if an unvaccinated kid comes or if a kid that's not vaccinated comes in, you should not see them. You should dismiss. I mean, where does this come from?
This is absurd. It's the height of absurdity because, first of all, whatever the political doctrine is or whatever the prevailing laws are at that time, nobody took an oath to a medical board or to the FDA or to the government. The oath that's taken, which is, you know, it's not really an oath that anybody actually takes, but the Hippocratic Oath is actually to take care of the individual patient. And you've seen my prayer for a physician, Maimonides, the saying from Maimonides that's actually at the entrance of our clinic, and that's the thing that I carried with me for the first 20 years after I graduated from medical school. It's that intention of taking care of the individual. So when you said the dilemma, the only dilemma that you've got is, am I going to sell my soul to the devil and do what the prevailing hierarchy is telling me to do, or do I do what the truth, what I know, which based upon my knowledge base is the only logical thing to do, is to wait for the immune system to develop and then to introduce this stuff without any preservatives, without any toxins, without any poisons, and do it in a way that the body can handle it, is that what's the right thing to do? Or do I just start injecting these kids, and if the parents say that, no, I don't want to have my child injected right now, then I'm just going to refuse to see them? There's a dilemma here. This is a fiduciary ethical responsibility that every doctor has, is to take care of the patient. And the only debate here is that, you know, at what point do you sell your soul?
Right.
That's my own question.
Well said. And I think about this. So at what point did being a doctor become only about vaccination? Right? At what point did being a pediatrician become only about, you know, vaccination? When you come out, this is really it. And if they don't comply, you should just not see them. You should just fire them from your practice. Now, our argument is if a doctor plays that game, you don't want to be seeing that doctor. They're too ignorant to take care of you, or worse, in a way that could actually be beneficial to you.
You're exactly right, Robert. That was a beautiful summary, because that's exactly it. If they're not wanting to see you, thank the stars. Say a prayer of gratitude, because that is God protecting you from the wrong doctor.
Right. And folks, I'll add this. Our friend Sherry Tenpenny once said this about, why is it that we have to, in order for children to survive childhood, see an allopathic medical doctor at all, unless there's an urgent reason for it? Why not see a doctor of chiropractic or a naturopath or a homeopath? I mean, what is it about that? Was that programmed into our brains, or was that there from the time of Adam and Eve or prior?
Yeah, it's again that programming and the type of programming that we all undergo, and you know the way that doctors are put up on this pedestal, and that nobody should argue with them, and then of course then you brainwash the doctors, and then you start feeding them information, and if anybody steps out of line, you prod them with an electric cattle prod, and then you beat them, and then you know, and so it's that same mentality. What's interesting to me is that these people that come out and start attacking. I've made a couple posts. I've been attacked. And is this the same Dr. Bouchard that killed four cancer patients? You know, that you've been brought up sued for fraud and you've lost your license. You're not allowed to see patients. Like, where do people get this horseshit from? My response was, do you know how to read? Why don't you go read the Act of Faith? And then people defend you. They'll have other people come and they'll start attacking those people. It's just
right.
Absurd.
All right, stand by. Inflammation in middle age linked to what? Cognitive decline? How could that be? Another angle on the inflammatory story coming up with Dr. Bouchard here on the Robert Scott Bell Show next.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Making sense out of medical propaganda. Here's Robert.
About each and every week at this time for a lot of years now, we've been doing advanced medicine with Dr. Rasha Bittar here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. Archives are available in so many places, including advancedmedicine.com now. And we've got our big upcoming event, the Advanced Medicine Conference. And there's a big banner linked up in the show notes. Just scroll down, as well as the upcoming events tab. And there's a discount code for those of you who take advantage early that want to be there with us in Pasadena, L.A., California, Memorial Day weekend. And Dr. Bouchard, if you want to add to that, we can continue, or we can continue talking about the insanity of, doctors, pediatricians going, you know what? It's vaccines or nothing. You can't come here unless you're vaccinated.
Well, yeah, I think this is something that's a major issue. By the way, Robert, I don't know whether I dropped out or not, but it seems like the connection had dropped out. Can you still hear me okay?
Yeah, so far so good. Eric will monitor the feed, but yeah, sounds good.
Okay, sounds good. So the question, could you repeat the question for me again?
Well, it was related to, you know, just an ongoing discussion of the physicians out there that are willing to say, you know what, I am not going to see you and your family because you're not following the CDC schedule from the ACIP to the letter or at all or anything in between. And it's like, again, the question is, when did modern medicine and becoming a doctor and being a physician become all about vaccines and nothing else? I mean, that's seemingly what you would believe at this point. If you're a doctor, that's it. Your litmus is, do you believe in vaccines like it's a religious belief or not? And then we'll let you know if you can keep going.
Yeah, it literally has become one of those type of situations where it is a religion. And if you don't believe in the religion, and if you don't follow it lock, stock, and barrel the way that they want you to follow it, then you will be ostracized, tied to the stake, and burned at the stake because you have chosen to become a heretic. And that's a sad place because we're talking about science. We're not talking about the Middle Ages, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's being treated that way. So there's a problem here, and we as a society have to start to understand that problem. And I think that's what's happening. I think that's why this struggle is taking place, because as a society, a lot of us are starting to understand that in all aspects. You know, there's certain people in the government, there's certain people in big pharma. There are people even within that industry that understand this issue. There are people at the CDC, we've already talked about, that really understand this issue, and they're they're appalled. They didn't even know that there were doctors addressing the heavy metal issue. You know, we've got the toxicology division and the infectious disease division. Nobody talks about the toxicology division. So there are pockets of people everywhere, and more people are becoming aware, and I'm very grateful for that portion.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, when you look at the economic imperative to vaccinate. If you're a physician, for instance, in a physician's group or tied to a hospital setting or a public health department, there are quotas involved. You have to get above a certain percent, and it's well above 90%. All full-on participation, if you will, uptake of the vaccines. If not, you will miss out on major bonuses. There's money tied to this. Is that, again, medicine, money? We know it's an economic imperative. You got to see patients, but my gosh, they will dismiss patients because you're going to bring us one percentage point under what we need to hit in order to get our bonus. That's another factual matter here that's not being brought up. And where is that in the Hippocratic Oath?
Well, that's another good point, because these are all the different aspects that we have to now not only become aware of and recognize, which is happening, but now also address it on a regional or state level or federal level. If we start addressing this on a local level, and then people on the local level, which I think is happening, that's communities that are being developed, not local necessarily like in a certain city or a certain town, but local in whether these virtual local communities like on Facebook or whatever else the case may be, and people are becoming more empowered by being associated with kindred spirits. I think the change is happening, Robert. It's a great thing.
Yeah, it is. And it's consciousness shifting. We recognize that not everybody gets it from the language, the use of consciousness in that way, but I think a lot in our audience do. We talk about energy, vibration, senses as such that are beyond what they're trying to induce in us, which is a lower level emotion known as fear, that is so overwhelming that it crowds out consciousness. It crowds out a connection to the source of all sources, our connection to our creator, that would give us solace and peace about these issues, making decisions not based on fear or even economics and money primarily, but on the genuine health of an innocent child who does not need to be injected with toxic poisons you would not put in their baby bottle. But that's the kind of common sense we talk here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. You won't find it many other places in broadcast media, certainly not in the mainstream media. But we'll keep at it. Dr. Bittar is here, Advanced Medicine. We've got a couple of more big segments to go, including a pretty profound question of the day on a subject we haven't talked about much, and a little bit more on inflammation and maybe a diabetes Alzheimer's link. So stick around. Lots more coming up.
Great heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Rocking the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, we got it going on. Advanced Medicine. We got the Advanced Medicine Conference coming up. There's a webinar coming up February 28th. For those of you listening live, you could sign up. We have links in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. They'll take you out to Advanced Medicine. There's the IADFW we talk about from time to time. Also, AskDrBittar.com. Great site. Videos up there. Politically incorrect, but factually correct regarding a lot of these things surrounding the vaccine paradigm, if you will, if I can call it a paradigm, but certainly it's a cult in this regard. Now, Dr. Bittar, do you want to touch on anything before I hit our first question of the day today?
No, I'm good.
Okay, well, let's launch at this point.
Excuse me, I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Here comes Declan. Is it Declan or Declan, Super Don? I can never remember.
I would say Declan.
Declan. I want to say Declan. It's not, well, no, Declan. No, don't, not the Klan. No, this has nothing to do with the Klan. The guy's name is Declan. D-E-C-L-A-N, all right? I've been quite ill for the past year, he says. I've had many different gut issues, but no solid diagnoses. I wonder about the stool, if it's solid or not. He didn't mention, but he said, I had one red herring of a mycobacterium appear in a culture a few months back. Upon further investigation via bronchoscopy, he's writing, we failed to find the same result. Oh, okay, they were doing it in the lungs. I've been told from a friend that given my symptoms, intestinal tuberculosis could be a possibility. Rare but not unheard of. Symptoms match up, and along with the previous mycobacterium culture, could be a bit too coincidental to forget. How could I go about treating this if this really was my issue? Declan. Okay, Declan. Dr. Batar, I've got some ideas here, but I'm certainly open to what you're thinking.
Robert, this comes back to a very, you know, why don't you take this one first? Because I think my answer is going to be a little bit on a different,
sure,
different perspective. So you go ahead and do your thing, and then let me, then I'll do my thing.
All right. So first, Declan, remember, and I've told this story over the years, my mentor in homeopathic medicine, who I studied with for over 10 years, had to overcome deadly tuberculosis in the 1950s, 1960s, given up for dead by the doctors and the homeopaths. And what he did was to address the entire terrain of his body. And there was a lot of intestinal discord, absolutely, as you mentioned in your question. Now, of course, he did it homeopathically. He switched his food to organic, cleaned up his act, and yes, he was able to overcome TB. Now, whatever form they're giving you as a potential here, the mycobacterium, we can be more aggressive, if I can call it that, in terms of if there's lung issues, we can nebulize silver into the lungs and other things. But it always comes back to the things that Dr. Batar talks about, and probably will in a moment, about the different toxicities. We're not going to necessarily change everything just because they give you that diagnosis. In fact, it might be doubly or triply important, because TB is a disease of abject poverty in most cases. So that means great deficiencies are a big part of this.
That's very, very true, Robert. And everything you said, it's a true statement. I think that the other portion, the reason I wanted to kind of say something a little bit differently. It's very important to understand that we tend to, as human beings, complicate issues. We tend to create more complexity in situations that don't require that complexity. And whether it is TB or whether it's mycoplasma, or whether it's something else, it's something very rare or something very common, you know, we need to stop worrying about the things that really don't matter, because the issue is there's something going on with the gut. So let's look at it from a functional standpoint. You can get into 10 different causations and the result will be the same. And it could be, for example, if there's a reaction to the body has of inflammation, it's that inflammatory cascade that can cause a problem. Whether the bug that caused the inflammation was a rare bug, or it's a commonly acquired bug, or it's something that's not even a bug. It's something else that caused the inflammation. It's the inflammatory cascade that's going to cause the problem. So if we look at oxidative stress as a commonality, and we start looking at these seven toxicities, you know, you've got heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, and the opportunistics, et cetera, this particular question is asking about the type of opportunistic. And you very appropriately said that there's other aspects to this, like the other toxicities we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So this really brings home an excellent point that I just experienced this with a person. And if you'll allow me and indulge me, I would like to tell the story, because I think it becomes extremely, extremely important for people to realize the power of what we're talking about. Because we're about to take the head map, and it's not going to be available for free for everybody at this point now. We're about to change that probably in another few weeks. And the reason is that I've realized something, that the power of this tool, the head map, because it's free, people have not put a value to it, okay? Now, I'm going to give you a story that just happened. Clinical psychologist about to be brought to me from Vancouver, who has had problems with her health for over 6 years, multiple doctors, and is now getting ready to be brought to me, happens to be the wife of a very good friend of mine. I'm good friends with her. And instead of them coming out, I said, listen, just do the head map. She does the head map. Starts in the protocol. 30 days later, she's in a state of panic. She wants to know, what am I supposed to do now? Should I be getting the same products with the same protocols? Should I be getting different protocols? You know, am I supposed to take the head map? What am I supposed to do? Very pressured. So to calm down, get on a call with her to calm down. First things first, how do you feel? Oh, my God, I feel so much better. That's one reason I'm anxious now, because I don't want to lose the progress I've made and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward, it's been 6 months. Tremendously better. All her issues, all her concerns, everything has been resolved. Her father had a heart attack. He's had a heart attack before. She wants to get her father going on the head map. They do the head map. I review it. First thing I see on the head map, heart score is like the fifth highest. Okay, it's not the top first, second, third, fourth, fifth. I mean, it was actually very slow. So I just, right off the bat, without looking at anything, I said, you know, your dad didn't fill this out right, and he obviously didn't take it seriously. Garbage in, garbage out. She's saying, well, I think he really did. I stressed to him the importance of doing this the right way, but, you know, I can have him do it again. And as she's talking to me, I'm looking at the head map again, and I realize his number one highest score is his energy. His second highest score is his adrenal. And then I started looking at the pattern, and I said, how much chest pain does he have? She says he doesn't have any chest pain, but he has a lot of shortness of breath on exertion. And then it started hitting me. It's not the heart that's the issue in this particular guy. He's been diagnosed with, he had a heart attack, but that's because his circulatory system, the pump is running dry. The heart, the pump is running dry because it's not getting enough blood. And so he's having ischemia, which is causing him to have low energy. His adrenals are shot because he's scared, you know, beyond his wits. And the heart itself is actually okay. It's all the occlusion. Now, the head map had picked up on that, and it took me a second to look at the head map rather than, you know, I just made an assumption based upon what the patient history that I had gotten, the abbreviated history, and I look at the head map, and I'm like, oh, he just didn't fill it in right. He did fill it in right. The head map picked up that subtle component, diagnosed with a heart attack, but it wasn't actually the heart issue. It's actually a circulatory issue that's impeding the function of the heart due to a lack of circulation. Now, when this person, Declan, asked the question, immediately it came to my head again. If a person does the head map, it's a tool that allows an individual to be able to get the information that they need. Mm-hmm. Now, we're still going to actually allow the head map to be free for a certain subsegment of people, but we're going to take it over for everybody that's heard about it up to this point. They'll always have it for free. We're never going to charge for it. But I have now just made the decision that we're going to back up and we're going to actually reassess, because this tool, and there's over 20,000 people that are using the head map. So don't get me wrong. There's people that are using it, but the power of the protocols and the power of the information it gives us, it escapes individuals, perhaps because they see it as free, so they don't put a value on it. So definitely, if I were you, I would take the head map, see where it zeroes in, and start taking, follow the suggested protocols. You don't have to do it from us. You can go out and get it yourself. I mean, we've got specific things that are already designed for what we find the scores to be. So we already have worked out all those details, and you're welcome to do it on your own. But the head map tool will at least tell you where the issue lies. And then from there, you can monitor your progress, and you can also evaluate the efficacy of the treatment that you're taking. So, you know, I'm just letting the world know that there's a tool out there for you to use. Don't get so enamored with all the fine nuances of which bacteria cause it and what the problem is and how do we look at it from a general 30,000-foot elevation viewpoint. Approach it, figure out what's happening functionally, help improve the function. And more often than not, I would say 85 to 90% of the time, well, statistically, we know it's 92.56% of the time, within 60 days, people have improvements when they follow the protocol that's suggested by the head map.
Yeah. I had experience last week. We covered briefly a question about myasthenia gravis and, of course, went right to the heart of critical deficiencies. And in follow-up, this woman who had asked that question was just so ticked off at me. I'm going to say it. She was laying into me. How dare you answer it that way? It was embarrassing. I'm like, what? You know, I'm like, did I charge you something? I didn't charge her a thing. I mean, obviously, it was a radio question, so I didn't even list her name. But, you know, it's like the complexity with which she was expecting and wanting. And I could go back and go through more complexity, and I might do it just because if she had a problem with it, there are probably others that would want that. But the idea of focusing on the complexity is where we've gone wrong. It's like they wanted a real in-depth medical pathway explanation. Here I was going, you know what? This is a pathway out. This has worked before time and again. And, you know, but no. I want the complex examples. I want this. I want that. Okay. So everybody wants it wrapped in a different bow. And sometimes because they're so focused on the wrapper, they don't ever get to what they can actually do now. And I think what this ahead map is doing is empowering people. It's simplifying this. It's bringing you to a place where most doctors, because they don't do advanced medicine, with all of their knowledge, they can't get you there. In fact, they're going the wrong direction with the information, and they think it's a drug deficiency as opposed to what we know it is.
And we know that the body wasn't born with that deficiency of whatever that drug is or whatever that substance that people are telling you that you may need. And the beautiful thing here is that nature inherently is simple. You know, when we look at the way nature works, the universal answers are always simple. We don't realize how simple they are. And of course, you can look at the intricacies of everything and make it as complicated as you want. And like the genome project is a perfect example. I'm thinking that we're going to map out the genome and now we're going to figure out the disease, every disease, and we're going to cure every disease because a gene is going to define your disease. The fundamental first, like grade school level genetics, there's already a fallacy that that even a grade school kid would pick it up. Because if a gene is going to define a disease, and you have 20,000 proteins in the body, 20,000 genes in the body and 100,000 proteins in the body, then how can a gene define a disease if a gene defines a protein that's five times as many proteins?
Right.
It's already an inherent flaw in that system. So
another mathematical equation. And unfortunately, many of these doctors have failed that equation. We're going to try and make it simple even more so after this.
Can you repeat the part of the stuff where you said all about the things?
It's the Robert Scott Bell Show. Robert will be right back.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, Healing Principles, always on tap here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. We do advanced medicine with Dr. Bitar each and every week at this time. Links are up in the show notes to everything we're doing, including upcoming events, big ones. And the end of this month, if you're listening live, February of 2019, we've got the Autism Defined Facts on Autism launch. It's a webinar, free, and it's open to everybody, but you got to sign up to get in before it gets too many people. It's going to fill up February 28th. We have links in the upcoming events tab, also in the show notes. If you scroll down at robertscottbell.com, we got the big advanced medicine conference. Dr. Bitar, of course, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Del Bigtree, and others. Ty Bolger will present, Nia Peoples. That's going to be amazing. And that's Memorial Day weekend in Pasadena, LA, California. And we've got discount codes, but you got to get in there. They're going to expire soon, too. We want to get you plugged in as soon as possible. And with that, you know, the principles in healing, we don't get caught up in the weeds of, you know, it's not that we didn't, how would we say, we just ignore things like mycobacteria, like with that last question. But they can often be a distraction, much like the measurements that doctors will say, hey, let me test the levels of a virus in your body. And then people freak out when we're on a holistic protocol that is neutralizing, let's say, viral replication cycles. And suddenly they get a viral load test and it goes sky high. And you ask them, as Dr. Bitar mentioned earlier, how you feeling? I feel great. Why are you freaking out? Well, my doctor told me I should be freaking out because the numbers are going up. But you feel great. Yeah, I feel better than ever. Well, could it be that we're dealing with a debris field that is not clearing the body fast enough? Because the starting point of all this was the congestion of your excretory pathways, liver, kidney, colon, lymph, all of that stuff. And so that's not being discussed much in the medical field. And it seems like we have to go back thousands of years to find it in Ayurveda and Chinese medicine. Of course, more commonly now in homeopathic medicine and naturopathy. And Dr. Bitar, that's advanced medicine.
That's exactly right. It's true and it's tried. It's withstood the test of time. And there's a reason that all these different varying traditional, old, ancient, whatever you want to call it, from different cultures and you know, transcending geographical boundaries, that they have the same universal principles of elimination, improving, you know, gut function, liver, lymphatics, et cetera, et cetera. And think about it. How many doctors, when you go to from the traditional side, do they look at elimination? How many doctors will look at elimination? I mean, the only time a doctor would look at elimination is if there's some kind of obstruction. So if the person's constipated or they're impacted, you know, they have fecal impaction, they haven't had a bowel movement in 10 days, 15 days, or they've got a kidney stone, they can't pass their urine. That's the only time to start looking at elimination. Otherwise, let me take that back. They're looking for urinary output, like post-surgical or ICU
sure.
type stuff. But on a regular, everyday basis, when you're evaluating a person's health, nobody looks at elimination, or very few people look at elimination. And even some of the naturopaths that we've talked about, Robert, before, right?
Yes.
We're talking about this antibiotic and that antibiotic
right.
issues. I mean, it's ridiculous. So just looking at pathways of elimination, like the Ayurvedic traditions and the Chinese, and mm-hmm. and there's a lot of things, even in homeopathy, it's all about elimination, detoxification. It's getting the things moving in the body. Remember that you take in nutrients, but you're also expelling waste. So if your waste isn't being expelled, it's being retained in your body, and it's going to cause a problem. If it's not causing a problem, it's going to cause a problem over time. And so this is one of the things that people have failed to understand. If you eat three times a day, you need to have three bowel movements a day. If you eat twice a day, you should have two bowel movements a day. If you eat three times or four times or five times a day and you only have a bowel movement every third day, there's a massive problem going on.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. Doctors don't address that very basic fundamental concept of elimination. So that goes back to what you were saying. It's not that we have a lack of... It goes back to Declan's question, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that we were born with a deficiency of a certain type of drug. We just have to understand how the body works and start to honor that and facilitate that process to enhance the metabolic pathways and how the body normally works.
And remember, the mycobacterium is an opportunistic in a body that has become toxic, deficient, etc. And again, we talk about emotional toxicity, all of the things that are listed in the 9 steps to keep the doctor away as well. But, you know, the idea that you're just, hey, look, we'll take your blood, we'll give you this number, we'll tell you whether you should be freaking out or not.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
That's not advanced medicine, folks. This is. Dr. Bitar, we are out of time. Another great episode. I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did. And remember, the archives are available at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, UK Health Radio, here on GCN Live, and, of course, advancedmedicine.com now has it. AskDrBitar.com is also another great site. We've got them all linked up in the show notes with the upcoming events. Dr. Bitar, I'm giving you a little extra time to warm up for the finale here because you need to tell them what they need to know because it's time to go.
That the power to heal is unequivocally yours.
Oh.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.